Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. People are joining us right now and will be. I think there's around 120 of us already, which is lovely. Tonight's talk is setting boundaries and taking back control. And it's a very interesting topic for me because what it's inviting me to do is just check what boundaries do I have? Do I communicate clearly? Do other people understand what I need as a person? And do I understand what other people need, what their boundaries are? Not everybody likes to be hugged. Not that we can at the moment, but when we could, not everybody liked being hugged on the first greeting. So setting clear boundaries. But within that, I've always found this subject very interesting. The subject of how then my time, my energy, and also my self-worth play in all of these. So we've asked Margaret to join us this evening to explore two things with us. Firstly, how to set and communicate healthy boundaries, where we're not pushing people away, but we're not also allowing familiarity, which then undermines us as individuals. The second is knowing when to compromise and when to hold your ground, because not all things are equal in all situations, right? And so those are two areas we'd love to hear from Margaret. Margaret Barron has a degree in adult education and training and currently works as an empowered living consultant. Margaret's particular interest is in transformative thinking. So I'm now going to hand over to Margaret. Just before I do that, I'm going to say she will be answering your questions. All you need to do is send your questions to us on the question and answer link in the but in your email, the confirmation email. And those emails will come through to me, those questions will come through to me, and I will be putting those questions to Margaret on your behalf. So over to you, Margaret. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me. And I come from quite a large family. I'm one of 11 children. So I think probably from very young age, you learn to negotiate boundaries. But also at the current time, I live as part of a community. And in this community, there's, seven of us, and we're from different backgrounds and different ages living together, and so that creates a different scenario. I also moved through a work situation, which mostly is on Zoom now, but usually it's kind of more like a tutor teacher scenario, like a trainer scenario. And in that scenario, there's kind of boundaries that need to be set. And then I think there's all your own personal boundaries that you have with yourself. And that's probably an area that we don't often think about so much. So I just wanted to move through these different areas. And I think the maybe the easiest one to talk about is the work one. And whenever we start a training, we always write up, and even when we're doing it on Zoom, it's the same actually. We always have what we call a group, we can call it a group contract. And that is maybe about 5 points where we discuss what would help everyone have a nice learning experience, because that's what the aim is, isn't it? It's to create a win-win for everyone. So, what would help to create an environment where people feel safe and comfortable to learn? And and a lot of the trainings I do, they're open to the public. So basically, anyone from any walk of life, any background can come in, and that does create a scenario where it's quite important to have, a kind of contract of behavior, really. And so the classics that always come up, confidentiality always comes up. And even within confidentiality, it's kind of to be clear what confidentiality means. Confidentiality doesn't mean that you can never share anything from discussion, but what it does mean, it sets a boundary that you cannot share something that identifies someone. So for example, if in a group there was mostly females and only one male, and you were relating something outside the group, you wouldn't be able to say "he said," because that identifies that person. So you're breaking a confidentiality. Or if someone had like auburn hair, and there was only one person in the group who had auburn hair, and you said, "Oh, the person with red hair," you've crossed a confidentiality. But if you just said "someone said," it's because it's so general, you're not breaking. But even if you actually said "the tutor said," you're actually breaking the confidentiality. But mostly I don't mind, because I'm quite open and I'm quite clear about what I'm going to share and what I'm not going to share. So it's a kind of interesting thing that we do at the beginning of the training. And also then if it's sort of written up on the board, or it's written up, at the beginning of the Zoom, then if someone starts crossing a boundary, you can come back to it. But a big one is listening. And I think listening probably goes through the thread of all of these areas. How much am I prepared to listen before I say something? So, and we all know that it's a skill, it's an art, and probably we're not that good at it. As, obviously some people who, I remember one person telling me, for her, she's in a talking therapy, and she said they practiced listening for 2 years. It's like most of us, we're so used to speaking and not listening so much and jumping in and all these things. So, listening is a key component when you're setting boundaries, but also when you want to take back control, because you need to, in a way, listen for other people's needs and listen for your own. So the work environment is one of the easiest, because mostly in the trainings that this one does is that I go and train, it's a day or 2 days, or maybe it's over a 6 week period or something like that. And you'll notice in the group that if it's over a long period of time, you have to, every time I will say it's like a 6 session training, then every time I will pull up those and remind what this is, what we all agreed to, because people forget, they get a bit more familiar, as was mentioned, and then you cross boundaries. So there's that one. I think in going back to family, since the beginning of lockdown, I think probably since last April, we've had a weekly chat for about an hour, and I think it started really to support my parents, who are both 93 or 92, 93, and it was a way of them getting engaged every week, and it's worked out really well. And very quick, at the beginning it was like everyone talking at once and blah blah, and then we actually now we have MC, so either someone will be volunteered or someone volunteers to be MC, and I've done it many, many times over the year. And this is that basically you go from one person to another, and they have, they just share their news, or they share whatever they want to share, and everyone listens. And it has been a beautiful way, because you catch up with what's going on, you get the flavour. And people tend to share what's kind of the highlights, so you get the highlights and everything. But there was one occasion, it only happened once, and I was sharing something, and another member of the group said, "Oh, you don't have to share." I didn't share more than my 5 minutes or whatever it was, and someone said, "We don't need to know everything." And it had never happened in the group before, and I felt at that time that it had crossed the boundary. And so maybe because I have a lot of practice of this, being in groups, I said, "I'd really appreciate it if when I'm speaking that that everyone listens, just like I listen to everyone when they're speaking, and I enjoy hearing their news. It may not all I might not understand it all, I might not relate to it, but I just really enjoy being part of the family and hearing the news. And it took a bit of courage to do it, but it's never happened since. So I think sometimes with these situations, you know, sometimes you have to act immediately. Sometimes it might be better to do it privately with that person. And sometimes you might decide it's not worth it to do it. But it was helpful, because it just happened that the 2 days before that, I'd been on a course that was about bullying. And this particular relative has a little bit of that. It's not major, but a little bit. So I think because I'd been on that training for 2 days, it was almost like I was quite clear, you know, what were the boundaries. So you know, and I, afterwards, I did think, should I have said that? But actually, two of my relatives called me later and said, you know, thank you for taking the courage to do that, because although it hasn't happened on the Zoom to me, it has happened in other situations. So it was kind of like I was prepared in advance for it. So that was kind of, you know, the luck of life, I guess. So, but generally, it's been really respectful and really lovely. And, you know, you've got elderly parents, you've got babies who've been born through the lockdown. So, you know, they're just doing what babies do. And it's quite amazing, really. The other area that probably has its own challenges more is the people that you live with. And of course, we've been in a situation that has tested us probably to the limit in some ways. Some people have a very easygoing family scenario, so they may have cherished this time. Others, it's probably brought out the warts. And there's been a lot of struggles, and that's quite well known that some people have had really challenging times. And in the situation that I'm in, it's probably been a mixture, if I'm honest. And you know, because this whole situation has gone on quite a long time, but I have found it brilliant for my own development, and brilliant to, you know, to get to know someone. Because, you know, when you're living in a situation and people could just leave and they go off for the day, and you're kind of like, you know, passers by maybe in the evening, and, you know, it's not much. But when you're suddenly, you know, all the time with people, and they you see everything about them and they see everything about you, there's nowhere to hide. It has its challenges, but that also has its beauty, because then you start to shift. And I think it's quite classic in most groups that you go through something which they call norming, storming. I think it's norming, storming, forming, reforming, or something like that. Maybe I haven't got it all right. But you go through the norming, and norming is when you're all polite, you know, it's the beginning of lockdown, we're all nice to each other, this kind of thing. And then there's the kind of intensity bit that you go through, and the kind of some of the negative traits start to come up. And then it's like everyone has to work through those. And then you go into a kind of a forming bit, you come back together, but then there's a newness that comes, which is the reforming. So I think it's performing, the last one. That's when the newness comes out and there's a shift in the group. But it's quite a classic thing that happens in families, in organisations, any kind of group. It's well researched. And it feels like we went through that. And so there was a lot that happened. But we're quite, I guess one of the way that we manage the boundaries is that we have rotas for things. We have rotas, you know, like for cleaning the house. We have rota for even laundry, so people know the day that they're doing, and they can swap with others and things like that. But you basically know when you're going to do things, and then we have like an extra little rota that's not everyday kind of things, but maybe things to pay attention to for the household. We started to, at the beginning, I felt like a lot was left to me to order things. And so I said, look, hang on, we have to share this out. So it has ended up that people are a bit more aware of taking responsibility. So I think in the end, it's been really good, and people have grown and matured. But there was a journey to go through that, you know, and we did a lot more things together. Like we did things we didn't usually do, like had meals together and all these other things. So there was beauty that came out of that. And we did some activities together, and that, you know, where we did our best to see each other's great qualities and things like that. So it was a great time. I think the other area is the boundaries I have for myself. You know, the boundaries that I have for myself. And I think when we really look deeply at ourselves, you know, there's a lot of goodness in all of us, for sure. But there's also this thing called the ego, the I, the my, you know, the one that wants the boundaries all to revolve around the self. And there's also, we all have some kind of addictive personality. And it might be that it's not the hardcore addictions, but, you know, we might have a kind of addictive way of thinking about ourselves, or we may have a food issue or coffee or something like that. And so an area that's quite interesting, I think, is to start looking at, you know, can you set boundaries for yourself that allows you to bring change? And, you know, I think just like children, they say they don't want routines, but actually children thrive when there's routines. And I think adults do as well. It's not that you're not spontaneous and things like that as well, but creative. But I think when there's a routine, it really helps, like a sort of like a structure. But one thing that's really helps with the self and when you're with others is to be very clear about your goals and what you want from this life. Because if you're not clear about what you really want and where you're going, then you don't know what to do and what not to do. When your goals are really clear, then you know, well, this is going to help me towards my goal, so therefore I want to go there. And actually, this is going to take me away from that. It's going to waste my time, so it's not going to be helpful. And so I think in all this setting boundaries for yourself and particularly others that you live with, work with, to be very clear about what you want, where you want to be, and what might help you on that journey. Because then when others cross those boundaries, you're kind of clear that, yeah, that's not going to help me. So how do I communicate this? And I think in lots of the communications with others, that the best way to communicate is when there's no emotional charge in the situation. So often someone may do something where they're too familiar, they cross a boundary for you, and you get a feeling that comes up, like, you know that you're not comfortable. That is not the time to communicate. You've got to work through releasing that energy that you're holding yourself. That bit has to be released. It's like we can call it cool down. So you might, you know, even though the situation's bothered you, it may not be the right time to say. But it doesn't mean you can't say later. You know, you can take as long as you like to cool down, get your clarity. What is it that you really need to happen in that situation? And be clear before you go back and communicate. And then you can go back and you can say, you know, the situation that happened on Tuesday, I've been thinking about it. Can we discuss that? So never feel that you didn't do it at the time and you can't go back. Sometimes the best communications are when you do go back, but there's been a space so that they're not threatened, and you've had a chance to think about the clarity of it and how you might move to a win-win. Because I think in life, we can't make it all just about us and what our needs are and filling our needs. That's a very egocentric way of living. We do have to be aware of our needs and if those are crossed. But we also want to move towards a place where everyone is, you know, gaining from a situation. And that's the challenge, isn't it? You know, can I feel good in the situation, but can the boundaries be set in such a way that they feel good? And how do I communicate those without hurting someone? It's not easy. It's a challenge. And sometimes, you know, a situation comes and the ego jumps up straight away, goes into a reactive response, and then everyone's disturbed. You're disturbed, they're disturbed. You know, and then it takes quite a lot to, you can even say something you regret. And then it might take quite a long time to heal that, what you said. So it's really worth, I guess, number one thing is to have enough kind of self-counsel that when a feeling comes up in you because someone did or said something, if a feeling comes up in you, it can be quite a big feeling at times, even from something quite trivial. You know, it can push your buttons, it can trigger something, you know, like maybe, but you didn't know that you still carrying in you, because, you know, events aren't isolated. You know, we carry memories in our memory track from childhood, from teenage years, and suddenly here comes a situation from a work colleague or someone you live with, your children, your partner, and it triggers something in you. You don't, you know, and the feeling that comes up can be much more sort of powerful than the little situation. And you're thinking, why am I getting this big reaction? So that's why it's really important to let it diffuse from yourself. And the way that I found most helpful is to go and be quiet and sit and just in a way hold the energy until it dissipates. And when I mean hold the energy, I mean don't phone a friend, don't go eat, drink, all these things. Just kind of allow the energy to kind of release itself, to calm down. And what I've noticed when I am able to do that, and sometimes, believe me, I react, I'm not like saying that I always get it right, but the times when I have been able to, you know, move myself away from the situation, let the energy dissipate, I usually get more clarity about why it's pressing my buttons, and usually it's not really about that other person. It's about something in me that needs to change. And when I can do a little bit of work on, you know, healing that, and one of the methods I use is, you know, meditating, you know, going deeper into those beautiful qualities we have inside, and almost bringing that kind of negative energy into that in some way, then when I come back into that situation, either nothing needs to be said because there's a change in me, or there's enough change in me that I can communicate a boundary in that situation. And, you know, it might be the courage to say, when you do that, it really makes me feel this. And therefore, is there another way we can do this? So all of these situations, you know, work, home, it's not always easy. And you know, it's knowing, like discerning when to say, when not to say, when to completely let it go, when to, it would be good to say, but now's not the time, because either you can see you've got some kind of emotional charge, or you can see that they've got emotional charge. They won't hear anyway. So you'll be wasting your thing. So, and then it's think about, okay, I do need to communicate something. So what is the best way to communicate? Is the best way to communicate in a privately with them? Or is the best way to do it as a kind of general thing in a like a group meeting where it's not specific to a person, but it's just like, I have this idea that it might work better if this. And, you know, and that every situation is going to be unique, you know. So, you know, just kind of the going back to the self really a little bit more is, you know, one thing that I've learned on this journey is that the most precious thing to me, and I think to most, is to feel peaceful. I think none of us want to feel in conflict. And really there's, you know, behind the thinking mind, which we're often in the thinking mind, behind that thinking mind, there is like a space that's naturally peaceful. Often we don't go into that space because a situation happens and we go into a thinking mode. You know, let me think about it, let me analyze it, let me. And what I'm learning is that actually the best way is to almost say to your own mind, let's not think about this anymore. Let's go into that space behind that peaceful space and enjoy that for a bit. And you may need to go for a walk to get back into nature to do that, or you may be able to sit and go back into that space. And of course, a place like inner space, that's what they're teaching, you know, the way to do that. And that's why it's called inner space, because there is that space that we all have, but we don't really use it so much. Often we haven't been trained to use it. So it's about going back into that space and connecting with that peacefulness inside. And realizing that, you know, when you're in that space and you're feeling peaceful and you're feeling okay, it becomes much clearer to you what your boundaries are. You know, sometimes we can be so busy in life and thinking about life. And I think the real busyness of life isn't the actual doing of life. The real busyness of life is the thinking about what we're doing or we haven't done or we should do. That's the busyness of life, is our thinking. So when we can kind of come almost behind our thinking and sit in that peace and then reconnect with what is of value to me, what is my purpose in life, what is it that I really want to experience more of, then there's more clarity to know, okay, this relationship I can spend a little bit of time with because it takes a lot of my energy, but I have to do it, but I need to boundary it. And this relationship is very empowering, so that's great to you know, give that some time. But also we learn that the one that really we need to spend the most time with is with ourselves, because really the power that we need for living life well, we all live life, but do we live it well? That's the thing. The power that we need to live life well comes from being more and more in that inner space and connecting with something higher, you know, something that's inspiring and uplifting and rejuvenating. So, you know, so a lot of my boundaries that I'm setting at the current time aren't so much, I think we've set all the ones in the house, we've got so many rotas, I don't think we need to do too much more of that, but the ones that I feel is setting the boundaries on my own thinking, if that makes sense. So there's certain things that in the past I would think about, and I now got boundaries where I think, no, you don't need to think about that anymore. That happened 20 years ago. You do not need to think about it. So it's a putting a boundary up there. And one of the ways that I've done this is almost to put like a door on my past. But that door is covered with flowers. You know, it's not like I'm, you know, pushing my past away. It was past. There was a mixture within it of happiness and sorrow, joy and sadness. It was a whole mix. And I took loads of learning from it. To be honest, not necessarily at the time, but in retrospect. In retrospect, I've taken a lot of learning from it. At the time, probably not much. But I've got like a door of flowers on it. And that is like making peace with it. It was what it was. But I don't need to go there anymore. Now, having said that, we have things inside us that, you know, are buried in our subconscious. And they come up. So it's addressing those, but I don't need to go back and think about all the details and, you know, what they said, what I should have done, all the things, or if only this, only that. So I've set a boundary for that. And sometimes my mind does go there. And I tend to now, if my mind goes there, for a moment, I allow the faces of the people to come in my mind, and I just, from my heart, send, you know, wherever you are, I send you the best wish. Thank you so much for what I learned. I really wish the best in life. And it almost feels like it then slots back into the past again. It's almost like they came in front of me to get a good wish, and now it's gone back into its, you know, file, if you like. And then there's a little bit of a boundary on the future. Not on my aims and objectives of the future, but a boundary on not going into anxiety about the future, because we don't know. We really, really don't know what's going to happen next year. We don't know. So it's keeping my goals in front of me, and, you know, setting boundaries about my goals, but not putting a boundary around anxiety. And if anxiety comes up, then, you know, then I just do my best to support myself and, you know, soothe myself and just say, be okay, you know, don't go there. And so, you know, the boundaries for myself is more and more to live in the present, and to live in the present with, you know, good qualities, really. That's the aim. You know, the future aim, in a way, is very similar to the current aim. The current aim is to practice expressing all these good qualities that we all have inside. And maybe the final aim is that I'm there with all these qualities. So it's not my current and my future that, you know, they're the same, really. Just the future would be more of them. You know, it's not that my aim is not a career aim, or, you know, it's not anything like that. It's just to be a better person, really, to be someone that expresses goodness. And that's the aim, really. So I think I'll leave it there, and we can just have a little bit of quiet reflection, and then there'll be time for questions. So one way that I help set a boundary for myself and, you know, with others, really, is one thing that I do is sit quietly. And I imagine that inside my skull, at the level of my eyes, there's like a circle of light. Just going around, it's almost like, you know, imagine it's going around the inside of your skull, but it's inside and it's at the level of your eyes. And then I think about that everything outside that circle is about life. And it's external to me. And everything inside that circle, my thoughts, my feelings, my attitudes, my perceptions, they're kind of like in that inner space. And really, when those things are aligned with what I was talking about, that goodness, then that is really what's going to be expressed outside. So what I do is I have that circle of light, and I'm very clear that there's the external and the internal. And then it's like I take myself to the center of that inner circle, and I call it the still point. And just focus on it, focus on that center point. And I've always liked this word, still point. And what I've noticed is as I focus on that tiny little point at the center, and usually I see it like a white point, everything seems to just calm down. It's like the thoughts about the external, they become less and less and less as I focus on that still point. And as I focus more and more and more on that still point, I get a sense of that inner space. It's like the whole of that inner circle is space. And at the center point is the still point. And as I just keep focusing on that still point, it's like that's where my attention is going. And I start to feel more peaceful, more calm. And it's like that peace, that calmness starts to fill that space, that inner space. It becomes very clear that life is outside, and my mind is on the inside. And what connects the two is thoughts. So if my thoughts are inside, focused inside, and my thoughts about experiencing this peace, then there's less thoughts. Thoughts are much slower, there's space. You might even feel that your thoughts slow down so much that you feel the space between your thoughts. And in that space between your thoughts is a very unique silence. And if you become more interested in the space and put the space as more interesting than the thought, you will experience your own silence. Very profound to experience your own silence. It's not there. Like the heartbeat of yourself. And then when you come back to the still point, and then as your attention goes back outside that circle into life, you come back with a kind of clarity of who you are, what you really want from life,
very first question was, it's a great talk, Margaret. Can you please expand on Normie, Stormy, and I and mine?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm guessing now. I think it's norming, storming, forming, performing, or reforming, performing. It's something like that. And basically what happens is in any group, when people come together, you know, the first bit is you have all the niceties. Oh, hi, how are you? You know, and the same in lockdown, everyone was on their best behavior, you know, willing to cook meals. You know, it's like everyone did their best to rise to the scenario. But then after, you know, after you've been together for a while, then the sort of, you start noticing others' habits, you start noticing, you know, things that kind of trigger things in you. I'm not just talking about the situation I was in, just generally, like, you know, if you're in a group, someone, maybe they overtalk or things like that, and, you know, people sort of getting, don't like it. So there's a kind of storming process that goes on where people feel uncomfortable and maybe there's a bit of conflict. And then it usually goes into a forming where people start to resolve the conflict, or they start to become more prepared to resolve the conflict and to look at maybe the issues in them that is driving their behavior or what's making them feel uncomfortable. And then the performing is when you, it's like the group takes a shift and you come out with some kind of newness and you start operating differently and much more in harmony. So I was just sharing how, you know, the group that I was staying with predominantly in the lockdown, still am, that it went through that phases. Maybe not, you know, maybe with different people at different times in a way. That's what I was sharing.
And I and mine, could you expand on that?
And the
I am mine.
I am mine.
Yeah.
I guess we have to look at, is what we're wanting from a situation going to develop my self-respect and self-esteem? Is that what I'm asking for from situation? Am I asking something that's going to help me develop that, or is that what I'm bringing to a situation, or is it very ego based, you know, where it's, you know, the world revolves around me and therefore I want this to happen and that to happen because it makes my life easier and I'm not that willing to compromise because, you know, I feel something's been taken from me. So I think when we're setting boundaries, we have to be kind of clear, are we looking for a win-win for everyone? And I think if generally, if we're looking for that, yes, I do benefit from things, but do others benefit? If it's I'm the only beneficiary in the situation, you've got to really check that one. If I'm wanting someone else to change to benefit me, but am I working towards what would be the best for everyone in this situation? And am I willing to change? It just happened the other day, someone gave me a signal about something. You know, it's not that I was doing anything particularly wrong, but they would prefer if I did it a different way. And so I took the signal and I've made a change, and it was good for them. It was good for me. But also I can see a bigger picture that's causing the situation that hasn't yet been addressed, but I will wait my time until it's the right time to address it. You see, so we have to, you know, we have to make sure that we're not coming from a revengeful, you know, oh, they got me to do this, I've changed now, so okay, let me give them the list of things they've got to change. It's revenge. Do you see? It can be quite subtle. So we might not call it revenge, but it, you know, so okay, I brought some change, I'll benefit from it, but there is still a bigger picture that needs to be addressed at some point.
That's very interesting. Okay, so the ability to see somebody else the side of things, to make, I'm not going to say change, but more make the empathy.
Yeah.
And then be have enough patience almost.
Yeah.
To know that we can unpick the next bit almost.
Yes.
Yeah. Very nice.
But also I think it's that that person at that point something was bothering them. So first you have to resolve that bit, because they won't hear anything until that bit's resolved.
Yeah. Creating a safe space almost.
Yes, yeah. And then maybe in a little bit, not straight away, but there is something else that I feel needs to be addressed, but, you know, I'll wait my time.
Yeah. That's lovely. That's really lovely. Mm-hmm. Next question, Margaret. And you were talking about speaking up in your family group, and this person's kind of bouncing off that. Mm. How do we speak up in a group setting when everyone is going along with something, but we feel uncomfortable because we fear coming across as irrational or otherwise feeling judged by others? And the person is referring to a specific situation. I don't know if you can shed some wisdom, sprinkle some wisdom over this. The situation is specifically a group agreeing to meet face-to-face outdoors for the first time during the pandemic rather than via Zoom.
Yeah, and I think this is tricky territory, actually, because it's the whole situation is going on for so long that people are now wanting to cut corners, you know, and so you can understand it. And, you know, I had someone today saying to me, oh, it's my birthday in May, I really want you to come and visit. Well, I don't know if I will be able to, because you know, it depends on what the state in the household is. You know, there's lots of things to consider because you're living with other people. And I feel when I took this course in the bullying, and I'm not saying that there's bullying in that situation, but there was one bit of information that I thought what was useful. And that is that if you're in a situation and not really sure what to do, is there someone in that situation that you could trust enough to discuss it with them? It's not necessarily in front of the big group first, but is there someone, like a buddy almost, like that you can say, look, this is what I'm feeling, is it right to feel like this, or even go and talk to someone who's not even related to that group and talk about it, someone. But you always have to choose someone that you feel does have confidentiality. You really have to choose carefully who you share confidences with. And I think in my own life, there is maybe one or two that I know I could share things that it won't go past them. But there's others that, you know, not because they're malicious or anything, but in their innocence, you know, someone might say something, oh, Margaret did that, you know what I mean? Kind of like an innocence almost. So, yeah. But what's the phrase? If in doubt, leave it out.
Oh, nice.
Isn't it? If in doubt, leave it out. So it might be that, and it might be that you have to take the courage to say, you know, in this lockdown so far, I've gone with the guidelines that have come from the government, and I felt comfortable with that. And I really, if you don't mind, I want to wait until I feel comfortable for the next step. And that's a courage, because, you know, sometimes we have to say something, and I guess the fear is that the group's not going to like it, or we're going to get isolated, or we're going to get rejected. But if that group isolates you and rejects you, were they really the friends anyway? Do you see? So sometimes we have to put it to the test.
Yeah, it's that The strength that comes from vulnerability
Yes.
first.
You know, if your friendships are good, they will weather a few difficulties. If they're shallow, they probably won't. And I think that's the test. I remember there was one work situation where I was working with a friend in this work situation. And we were just doing this little thing in a very small space, and we just bugged each other, you know. But at the end, you know, we talked about it, and we both decided you weren't seeing my needs and I wasn't seeing your needs. And then we laughed about it. And we said, well, what we should have done was been empathetic of your needs, and you should have been empathetic of my needs. But we weren't. But because we've had a long-term friendship for like years and years and years, you know, we could weather it.
Interesting. Lovely. Lovely. There's also a sense of surety that comes from that. So that's very nice. Okay, next question. I can't set boundaries, and when others do, I feel rejected. I think it is because I obsess with what others think of me and don't know what my boundaries truly are. So I actually, where do I start? How do I first start to know what my boundaries are?
Yeah. So it's a great question, actually. I think if you can go back to that inner space, and if you make one boundary for yourself, is that every day or a couple of times a day, that you are going to journey inside and experience your own silence, your own peace. And that means that you may have to give up something else. To get the time to do that. Say you say to yourself, okay, you know, maybe start 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes. I'm just gonna sit quietly and I'm gonna go inside. And that, even doing that and setting a boundary for yourself that you're gonna allow yourself that time will change many things in your life. So you know, change doesn't have to be big change. It's just starting something and being a little bit consistent with it. And then that consistency brings other changes. And then it might be that you start to enjoy it so much, and someone else, and you sort of have a time when you do it. And then someone says, oh, come and do that. Come and do this. Come and do that. And you say, no, I can't do that at that time because I go into my inner space then. Do you see? So if you get the bit for yourself right, I think other things start to come into play.
Creating value first
Yeah.
in
So
yourself.
it's first we sometimes we can't create boundaries because we're not we haven't kind of nurtured, and I totally understand this because I think as a teenager, I and maybe in my early 20s, I didn't really have many boundaries. You know, and I feel that it's because I didn't have value for myself. You know, I was kind of like a, you know, it was easy to please people or do what other people wanted to do, or, you know, so, and I think it's because I didn't have a good sense of self-worth. And I think when we start to experience our own silence and peace and build our self-worth on that, I am peaceful. That starts to change things.
That's really interesting. Next question is, how have you dealt with the boundaries for yourself when it comes to procrastination on your part?
Most of the areas of my life, I'm quite proactive, actually. But there's, of course, there are some areas that I procrastinated, of course. And I find in those areas two things that have helped. One is to put them on a list, put them on a to-do list. And the other thing is to ask for help. And often we don't ask for help. Like there's one project, And going with this is, I think that sometimes when something comes to you, there's a time for doing it. And when that time is there and that time's available and you do it at that time, and it might mean that you have to sacrifice other things to do it, but when you get it done at that time, somehow it's easy to get it done and it will happen. And if you miss that time, for whatever reason, maybe you are emotionally not quite with it, or you're focused on other things, or there was something going on in your life and you miss that time, it's quite hard to get it back. And I saw this with one particular project that sort of half the project got done quite quickly, and the other half, well, it was like four parts, and the other half didn't get done because other things were going on and I let them take priority. But it's been so much harder to do it. And so that was a big lesson for me. So I've now elicited someone's help on the two parts. And one of them is on the way and the other one's kind of starting. So it's also to make it manageable, because when we look at our energy, you know, it's like even can be little things. You open a drawer and it's a mess and you feel your energy drop. And so you just close the drawer. But actually, that energy drop is telling you that you need to do it. Because every time you open that drawer, you're going to get that energy drop. And when we haven't done something, it's undone in two places. It's undone at the place where the drawer is, the messy drawer, I'm just using that as an example, but also it's undone in our mind. And that's the hardest bit, is undone in our mind. And I have found that usually when I actually decide to get on and do it, it's never as bad as I think it's going to be. And when you have completed it, you feel a lot of release and joy. That's been my experience. So better to just do it. But, you know, you sometimes if it's a big task, you might need to break it down into manageable chunks and say, okay, Sunday for an hour, I'm going to do this much. Or, you know, if it's a work thing, okay, I'm going to do this much today. So making it manageable. And sometimes if it's manageable, you might do the first part and you've got enough energy to do two parts. I think this is the way forward with these kind of procrastination.
All right, that's got me going. There's a couple of jobs that I've been pending, so
especially when you feel happening. That energy drop, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
It's in your mind. It's always sort of pulling at it.
And that's fascinating.
Gnawing even.
And it does take up our energy completely. Mm. Yeah. Okay, the last question so far is, you talked about having boundaries on the past.
Yes.
The past defines us. It's where we've learned our lessons. And yet it can also be where we carry pain.
Yes.
And if you just shut the door on it, it might not work.
Yeah, but it's a door covered in flowers, remember?
Okay.
It's not like violent, but what I'm saying is that it's not that you don't take the learning from it, and I think that's the flowers, isn't it? The flowers is our learning. The flowers is the appreciation of the lessons. The flowers are that you're not denying it, but it's not appropriate for right now. But the bit that I was putting the boundaries on is when you go into thinking about something that happened a long time ago and you think, oh, I wish it had been different. If only I said this, or if only I hadn't done that. And, you know, it's when you're kind of ruminating on your past and it's not going to take you anywhere. It's kind of wasteful thinking. That's the bit that I'm putting boundaries on. But I'm not, I totally hear what you're saying, that we do carry a lot from the past. And I think that life in the present will show up anyway. You know, when we get triggered and we have feelings, it's usually showing up something from our past. It's not really about so much the situation now. It's kind of showing up something that needs healing. But, you know, a better way of doing it is to find a way that you really do heal it. You're not just thinking about it. And I found, you know, that, you know, taking that energy into that inner place of peace and calm and beauty that we all have inside us, and maybe handing it, surrendering it in a way to something higher, whatever that means to you, is probably the way to heal your past, rather than, you know, yeah, you're not putting a door on your past to shut it out, suppress it. You're putting a door on your past because it's, you want to complete it. You feel that you don't need to go into it to complete it anymore. You know, thinking about it won't complete. Forgiveness, maybe. You might need to have some meditations on forgiveness. Not so much on forgiving the other person, but forgiving yourself for taking the pain, or forgiving yourself for not understanding at that time and taking pain, or forgiving yourself for, you know, maybe the hurt that you caused. And I found that really useful. You know, it's almost like, you know, the more I do forgiveness meditations, the more flowers arrive on that door.
Lovely, yeah. Margaret, thank you. I know I'm walking away with that space and enjoying that space that you talked about in the meditation. Good night, everybody.
Good night.